So I've been following you for a long time, I think, at least by internet standards. And I think I first learned about your stuff through the cold email world, the cold email project, which is what I'm now doing too. And I would be very curious about like your actual path to how you ended up where you ended up now.
So I'll start like a little earlier in my career. I was a junior developer at a venture studio, worked my way up to CTO, became CTO of one of our portfolio companies. That was a big kind of venture backed thing. The venture studio was venture backed as well. Raised about $8 million at this venture company where I eventually took over as CTO, and I kind of like went to zero. And so that informed a lot of stuff I have done since, including XO, where I spend most of my time, where we buy small software companies. So we've bought 10, we've sold five, we currently operate five. We just raised a small $500,000 fund to go buy our 11th company. And so that's kind of like one avenue. At the same time that I started XO, I have, a list of thousands of ideas that I'm always adding to. And I was so burnt out from this company where we had raised a bunch of capital. It was a really kind of crazy computer vision company, really, really deep technology, really hard product to build. Again, this was like 6 years ago, so a lot of the tools for machine learning and computer vision weren't there. So we were doing a lot of this from scratch. The two co-founders were PhDs. They had done their whole PhD thesis on this. So it was like that kind of level and scale of a product. And I was so burnt out that I looked at my list, and literally the first one that showed up that I didn't actually have to build anything was cold email as a service. And so I just sort of said, okay, great, I'm going to do cold emailing. And I put up a website. I bought the domain coldemail.studio. That tagline, which we still really use today and haven't changed much and still works great. Yeah. And I just started emailing YC founders. Did a few for free, then started charging like $500 a month, then 1,000, and 2,000, and 3,000, et cetera. And that was how I got there. And then right away, actually, and this is probably unique, is I brought it to 10,000 a month and found a co-founder, and he became CEO. And after a couple months of me learning to let go, he kind of took over, and he has been running it ever since as CEO.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. And what was the startup product you worked on, the complicated machine learning stuff?
Oh, it was it kind of ended poorly, so I don't like to
Okay.
draw like too much attention to it. Yeah, it was
Okay.
it just think worst venture backed situation imaginable, and then that's what I experienced. Yeah, so I've been punched in the face multiple times on this particular project. It was a bad one.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And then it makes sense that you end up with an agency, just get some cash flow
Yes.
going. And it's the polar opposite in some sense. And yeah, I'm definitely in the same team without having been burned before. I never played the VC game, but definitely learned from similar stories. And did you have any cold email experience, or where did the idea come from?
No, I didn't. Not at all. It was just one of like 1,000 ideas, and me being a dude and overconfident in my abilities, I thought, how hard could this be? Turns out it's pretty nuanced, and it took a while to get things right. But I mean, you know as well as I do, it's like a lot of it is the initial kind of guess, right? Like what's kind of the pitch and who we're going after, and then it's just a lot of iteration from there. And so I had a low confidence that my initial bet was going to be good, but I had a high degree of confidence that I could look at the data and adjust. And it turns out that the types of customers we were pitching this to, that worked great for them. That's exactly what they wanted, and that's what they wanted to see over time was, okay, here's the idea, here's the bet, here's the data. Let's make some adjustments and see the data moving in the right direction, or meetings booked, or whatever metric you're kind of benchmarking against.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, because there are, as you know, there are a ton of agencies doing similar stuff. And why do you think you were able to find any customers at all, right? That's non-trivial.
So the subject line, cold email as a service, worked wonderfully. And we were just going after YC founders, and I snapshotted our landing page and did like kind of a big Indie Hackers post on our like original thing and our first few customers. So you can see kind of the whole thing there. And I had the timing right. So people had cash, not like today, right? Today it's much more difficult. This doesn't work today. So people had the cash. I had the right market. So YC founders, I know those guys like the back of my hand, and it was just the right product at the right time. So the right market, the right message, the right timing. And all three of those things lined up right out of the gate, which almost never happens.
Yeah, but I mean, sure, you might get lucky with that stuff, but it's still a business, right? It's not as if it went to zero or something. So I'm also curious, like, how long it took you to actually figure this out if you didn't have any prior experience. And just for context, I think my story and Ryan's is kind of similar because we didn't. Ryan had some experience, but he was primarily doing other kinds of sales before, and I had zero sales experience, and we just figured it out as we went, right? And also started offering for free. And I roughly know our timeline, but I would be curious, like, did the stuff you were working for these YC founders work right away, or like how much learning, or how many months or weeks, whatever, did it take you to actually see results?
So I was guessing when it was just me. When I brought Mikey on as a co-founder and he started taking things over, his first hire was a woman who had done this a bunch before and used to work at Science and kind of all the other like big people in the space. And she immediately took over kind of running all the campaigns and doing all of that stuff. So our quality went from like me guessing and being good at communication, but performance-wise, not doing super well or kind of being hit or miss. I mean, we had some early wins and stuff like that. Again, I think mostly it was market driven, which this business is, as far as I'm concerned. So we had a couple quick wins because, again, like the market was flush with capital and people were just like open to trying new things and spending cash to do so. So we got lucky there. And then, yeah, pretty immediately, like maybe 3 months in, we had that campaign manager that had come from Science and done, something ridiculous. And she had been for a good long customers got the benefit of kind of having her experience right out of the gate.
That sounds like he hit another jackpot. And I mean, how did you find her? Because I know from experience that hiring for an agency is non-trivial, right?
Yeah, Mikey did it. I think he either found her on LinkedIn and just started chatting with her, or had like a mutual, it might have been a mutual acquaintance that introduced them. Forget exactly how she got introduced. And I think it was acquaintance wheelhouse. Again, we had enough cash, like a reasonable salary. It's really nice. A lot of our lead researchers out of Ukraine. So that was kind of like the whole setup for a while.
Got it. Yeah. I think we have some internet connection issues. I'm not sure if it's on my end or your end. Maybe we can just turn off the video and this will save some bandwidth. That usually helps.
Sure.
That's cool. All right. Thank you. Yeah. It's very interesting. And we went through a few iterations of like there are different ways you can play the agency game, right? You can try to hire a lot of cheap overseas talent and then basically become a McDonald's. But you got it right, in my opinion, from the get-go, which is hiring actually good people, like people with experience and paying them well, right? And that is a lot more enjoyable. So, but you're no longer involved, right, in the agency at all. What's your role?
Yeah, I still do, and I still stuff like that. To be honest, though, when that set up, the way that we had it, our profit margin sucked. It wasn't until maybe 2 months ago now that we got rid of that original campaign manager, got rid of the whole Ukrainian team, and are like rethinking the whole business from the ground up. Again, that the profit margins were, it was maybe like a 10% profit margin business. And the reason is, as I'm sure you know, if people think that they can, people have a high degree of confidence they can write email copy, confidence they can do that. The part that they, in their own words, struggle with is finding the right people to contact. So if they can find them on LinkedIn, great. Then they don't come to us, they don't visit the website, they're not looking for agency services. So what tends to happen, or what tended to happen to us, is we would get customers that had the hardest customer profile to find. You had to find the prospects on Google Maps, and it was emailing to like generic email addresses, right? Like info@whatever.com and stuff like that. So that business, although we at one point hit like 40,000 in recurring revenue, the profit margin sucked. The customers were really, really hard, and all of the margin was getting eaten by really difficult to find leads. And so, yeah, a couple months ago, we just took a huge step back and just said, you know what, we're going to let some fire a few and kind of rethink this business from first principles again.
That's super interesting. I mean, what did you do? How did you turn things around?
So we're still in the process of turning things around, and we let a lot of the staff go, so the headcount went down a lot, right? So we kept good customers, people that we liked working with, people that also added some more like kind of content-y type services. So, you know, like I'm sure you've seen on Twitter, everyone's talking about like content repurposing and thought leadership and all these videos going out everywhere. And so we and on the front door seeking cold email services, and when they start the conversation, that's times, yes, I want to find my like prospects, and I want to send them like kind of a direct message and the call to actions, eventually book a meeting, that kind of a thing. And what we had emailing people about either getting on like a podcast or doing like some kind of async interview to be featured on a blog, those reply rates and open rates are just astronomically higher than, you know, like informational selling is right now, or just asking for a meeting. And so we had put a bunch of our customers on that kind of program, so to speak. And somebody away, if they're just looking for sort of, you know, direct stuff, we can still do that. But our happiest customers, our customers with the highest LTV, are the ones where we're running sort of this content play where we're either booking the meetings for them so that they can like go start to interview people. And then once we have the recording of the interview, you know, chopping that up into little bits and then reposting that all over, and kind of having a blended kind of cold email plus this thought leadership slash content marketing thing. It sounds a little confusing because the pitch varies based on kind of who we're talking to, but roughly speaking, yeah, that's kind of the current program.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Basically, you added a bunch of upsells with better profit margins, right?
Yes.
And that is smart. And I mean, where are your margins now with the cold email stuff?
Much, much higher. So the margins now, it's a little bit muddy because Mikey takes like a variable salary based on like how well we're doing in any given month. But if you remove him from the cost equation, the margins are at like 60, 50, 60% now, depending on the customer. We still have a few customers in the mix that are a little more challenging to find leads for. But as we transition, you know, as those people churn out and as new ones come in with this content play, it's much, much easier, because part of our moat now is that we have a huge list of people in one particular vertical that we have relationships with already, and they're open to speaking on other people's podcasts. So now when somebody wants to interview people in, and we're specifically focusing right now on customer success, so people that sell into customer success. We have a huge list, a huge database of customer success people that have opted in to let us contact them about going on podcast interviews. So now it's like customer signs up with us today, we could schedule like 8 meetings tomorrow to start recording and get like that content out the door super quickly. So our sort of time to value for customers has gone from, you know, like a week or two before, right, where you got to set up all this crap and maybe domains and email warming and all that garbage, to like literally tomorrow, I think we could book 5 meetings for anybody selling into customer success to at least get on the phone and start doing like a podcast interview just like this.
Cool. Yeah, man, that makes sense and is a really interesting play, and it's not a pattern I've seen a lot with agencies where in the beginning, like obviously everyone is just going after any person who's willing to talk and sign a deal and whatever. But then
Yeah.
once you had a bunch of clients, you can look at the data and ask yourself, okay, who actually are the best clients and where can we find more of them and get rid of everyone else, right? And I mean, a challenge for me is always how to assess this from the outside, right? And
Yeah.
what have you found, like, or in terms of, is it still like a lot of trial and error, or do you have a proper like vetting process to make sure you are now working with better clients as before?
My sort of tweetable way that I think about this is the medium is the message. So for direct cold email stuff, there's sort of this gestalt where if I send you a cold email and you open it and read it, and I say, "Hey, Jacob, I'm a cold email company. We do XYZ, whatever." There's something that happens in your brain that says like, "Oh, these guys must be good because I opened this email." Right? So that's an example of like the medium is the message. With this content stuff, if somebody comes in through our front door by kind of clicking through one of our thought leadership pieces that Mikey has put out on LinkedIn for our own stuff, they are in some way having that same gestalt where they think, "Oh, these guys must be good. I organically reached them, or through an acquaintance or whatever, sent me this video. And now I'm on the phone with them, and they can do this same thing for my business. And because I discovered them this way, I think this is going to work for my business, and other people can discover me this way." So my sort of like tweetable phrase is the medium is the message. Meaning, again, we need to get people through the front door in a very, very particular way. Like, I don't give it's an agency, right? So I don't give a shit if we have 100,000 visitors a month to a blog. If they're the wrong people, no one's going to convert. I'd rather have 10 people come to the site, book 4 meetings, right, and close 2 of them. That's a huge business for us if we can do that week over week. So that's my current thinking on it.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I think there's always a qualitative difference between the type of leads you get from cold outbound versus inbound through content marketing, for example, right? And
Yeah.
also, I think there is a lot you can actually do in terms of your messaging when you're running cold outbound, to make sure you're actually attracting the right kind of people. But no, that definitely makes sense. And I definitely want to talk about your new stuff. I'm always get excited talking about cold email and stuff because that's what I think about most of the time. But the acquisition entrepreneurship is so fascinating to me. And you mentioned you had this big list of ideas, right? But somewhere along the path, you decided, actually, I don't want them do I don't want to do these. I would rather buy someone else's business, right? How did that happen?
Yeah. So, if you can't tell, the timelines on these things are a little fuzzy because I do a lot of things kind of in parallel. After the company, the big venture back thing died, I started another thing from scratch, another kind of like AI thing, and sold that in 13 months and was just exhausted by those two experiences, both of them, and sort of came across Andrew Wilkinson and Tiny Capital and saw what those guys were doing and thought like, okay, great. I have this agency. Maybe I can grow the agency. The excess cash flow can be accumulated to purchase businesses and I don't have to start the thing from scratch. And maybe I'll just try that. And so, yeah, I put a couple people together. We just wired money to each other. These guys I'd never met in person, and we bought 3 initial businesses and was sort of off to the races doing that. Now, those 3 original people didn't end up working out. Like some people wanted out or like didn't want to do it anymore, whatever. We bought them out and I brought new people in, and sort of XO 2.0 has been around for 2 years now. And similarly, one of the 3 of us, there's 3 partners now at XO, and one of the three of us takes a salary. So he's kind of full time. So again, like Coldemo Studio, Mikey's CEO, XO Capital, I would say Danny's more or less CEO of that. He's on the ground doing day-to-day stuff. So yeah, I mean, just buying revenue is like the most beautiful thing on earth if you do it right.
Yeah, that's I always love the playbook, the idea of it, like the get a cash flow business going, agency, and then invest it into businesses. And this was also Ryan and my idea from the start, and kind of it has been put a bit on the back burner for now because the cold email agency that we are running is eating all of our time.
Yes.
But it's also it's not that easy, right? I think obviously it is easy to buy a business, at least a shitty one, right? That is not rocket science, but buying a good one, I think, is very, very hard because there's a ton of noise out there. And I always love reading your updates where you talk about like the businesses you bought and the lessons learned. So
Oh, thanks.
I would also love to hear like how your thinking evolved in terms of like what is a good business to buy, maybe if you're just starting out, but also in general, like what are the things, maybe surprising things you learned along the way in terms of what signals to look for when I want to buy a business.
Man, it's so specific. So I hate giving like generalized ideas on this stuff because it just totally depends. But let me be clear first. The agency doesn't kick off cash flow that we use to buy these businesses. That hasn't worked yet. I'm sure you guys are experiencing the same thing. Like it just, when Andrew Wilkinson did it from Tiny Capital, he had a Meta Labs, and they like it was a design shop, and they design Slack. That was kind of like their thing. And then they got in with like all of Silicon Valley and became kind of like the premier design agency. And their sort of like cash accumulation, I think, was obviously they were great, but they also, were charging US prices and paying people Canadian wages. So they were able to accumulate cash in that way and then start buying businesses over. And this took, like, I don't know, 5, 7 years, 10 years. And it's been much longer since then too. But yeah, so like that for our agency like hasn't worked out at all. It's just been our own cash. Like these three guys is like cash that we've accumulated by just working at jobs, right? So it's not like we have this model dialed in by any means. But in terms of like buying the businesses, we don't have a thesis. So I believe that because we are so small and it's just been our own capital so far, like this initial $500,000 raise that we just did was the first outside money in XO. Everything else has just been our own cash. So that definitely limits our ability to even have a thesis around what to buy, right? So one idea is like we could just buy sales tools so that all of our customers are salespeople in some capacity. And every time we acquire a new business, we could maybe cross-sell. And that might be a thesis. Another one might be developer tools. So we only buy developer tools, and every time we buy a new company, we acquire X new developers, right, that have signed up before, and maybe we can cross sell, et cetera. We don't have, I don't think, enough cash to execute on that. So we have a couple, sales tools, some marketing tools, developer tools. We've bought distressed venture companies. So we bought two companies that have gone through Y Combinator and failed to hit venture scale, had a little bit of revenue, and we bought two of those businesses. I love those. Those are great. But to answer your question in terms of like what we're looking for, again, the kind of tweetable thing is if a business is growing, it will probably continue to grow. And if a business is not growing, it's probably not going to continue to grow. That's my like big insight after doing this for 3-ish years, is that turnarounds are really, really tough. So I look for buying some kind of product, right, in some state, but usually a lot crappier than you would like. So there's product, some customers. So I want to buy a few customers. There's varying degrees of product market fit. I think you can have it very early on, like Cold Email Studio. I'm sure you guys kind of felt this too. It's like there's product market fit there. People need these services or want these services. It's sort of just how do I reach them and convince them that we're the right group? So we're buying product, we're buying customers, and then I want to buy the third thing, and this is really important, some kind of channel that's working. So I want to see either ads working. I don't care if it's paid or earned or organic, whatever. But I need one channel. So ideally that's direct organic traffic, right? So they've done some SEO work and they've waited that 6 months for that to sort of start to bear fruit. I love buying stuff like that. So again, some product, some customers, and at least one channel. And I want all of those kind of three things trending upward and to the right. Not in a big way, but I'm talking 3% month over month growth for maybe the past 6 months. And if we can check those boxes next to those three things, that's something we take a closer look at. And then of course, price, right? If we're overpaying, it's going to be really, really difficult for us to cash flow our money back, which we try and do within 2 years after acquiring the business. I know that was a lot.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And the only question then, of course, would be, why would anyone ever sell a business like this, right? If you have like these three curves all pointing upwards, I'm pretty
So,
sure the owner feels pretty good.
yes and no. I mean, a lot of people want a venture-backed business and they want to be on a venture trajectory. And if they've been doing it for 2 or 3 years and it's growing, right? Everything's trending in the right direction, but not at the right velocity. They can't raise additional capital and they want to go do something else. People also might just be tired, right? They've been trying to push this rock uphill for a couple of years and they're over it. Early on, the first thing we bought was making $500 a month. It's called screenshotapi.net. It takes programmatic screenshots, like really not anything fancy or sexy. That business is now doing 5,000 a month. And that founder was like, great, I could wait 2 years to, make or cash flow what these guys are offering me today, or I could just take the money and move on to a different project. And plenty of people choose that option too. So there's all kinds of reasons, but number one for sure is that people are just tired or, are done with it. They want to do something else.
Yeah, that makes sense. And where do you go about finding these companies? Is it all over the place, or do you have a very structured process where every morning you spend 1 hour checking these seven sources and going through checklists and stuff?
So I do some direct outreach. If I see a product, my pitch today is the same as it was when we first started, which is, I'm sure the timing's not right, but if you ever think about selling, ping me. That is how we've gotten 2 out of the 10 deals. Some are on acquire.com, so these marketplaces. But yeah, a mix of cold outreach or cold DMs on Twitter before it was X, that was working. Some stuff on LinkedIn, right? Plenty of people now send us inbound stuff because I write about stuff on the blog and post about it. And people, just message us like, hey, I'm thinking about selling my business. If you guys would, if this is interesting for you guys, it'll save them a lot of time not having to go through the hassle of selling it on acquire.com or finding a broker or all that stuff. So yeah, outreach, some inbound, and then the marketplaces.
Yeah, and I can imagine that the best deals are the ones coming from your direct outreach, where you're planting the seeds early, right? Because once businesses hit these marketplaces, there's a lot of competition, right? And the prices probably go up. And
Yes and no. So from our experience, a lot of the people on these marketplaces are tire kickers and they don't really have any interest in buying the business. And so a lot of times, like, we'll come in kind of hot and heavy and say, like, we're ready to go. Here's our number. And it's kind of lower than maybe what they were expecting, but they see a lot of interest on Acquire. So they tell us to F off. And then, 3 weeks later, they come back and they're like, hey, is that offer still on the table? Because nobody else, was real. We've experienced that quite a few times. It's actually very rare for us to be in like direct competition for a particular deal.
Oh wow, yeah, I had no idea, but that is super fascinating that this is happening. And yeah, it makes sense. Like people are on Zillow, whatever, all day just browsing. Like
Exactly.
in real estate, you also have the looky-loo problem. Just people want to get a peek behind the curtain, and I've seen this a lot. Like people complaining that people are just interested in the numbers and the inner workings and all that stuff, but not really interested in buying. And I guess it really helps that you're very visible online, at least to some extent, right? On Twitter, on your blog, and people can really see, okay, this guy is the real deal and actually buying
Yes.
stuff, and not just yeah, actually pulling the trigger, not just look a loop or whatever. So that's
Yeah.
a smart
Yeah.
playbook.
XO is still pretty small. I mean, we're doing, what is it now? 30, 40, 45, 45,000 a month, roughly, for full-time people. And I think still the most valuable thing that we have is that audience. We raised $500,000 in like 3 weeks, exclusively from the audience that reads our newsletter. And that's only like 850 people. So I think doubling down on the content and really investing in community, I think that'll be a really huge differentiator for us. Because there's plenty of founders that follow us and read us on there too, you know, and they're maybe 6, 8 months, 12 months, 2 years, whatever, away from selling their business. But when that time comes, we're going to be the first people that they reach out to because they already have a high degree of confidence. And as you well know, like with a podcast, you know, you get this kind of relationship with some kind of podcast host, even though you don't know them, a kind of parasympathetic relationship where you feel like you know them even though you haven't met them. And so yeah, just continuing to double down on the blog and making videos every week to really just to gain trust.
Yeah, that's really smart. And I guess it also really helps that you get some kind of flywheel going with the offer you have at your agency, right? So that's really cool. So we're running out of time and I really, really enjoyed this. So thanks a lot for taking the time, making it happen despite the weird time zone. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob. It's nice to finally have a chat with you. We've been going back and forth for well over a year.
Yeah, and I will definitely keep reading your stuff. And if I ever have a business to sell, I know who to call. So,
That's right. Awesome. Thanks, Jacob. I appreciate your time too. Take
talk
care.
soon. Bye-bye.